Good morning and welcome to Simply Science. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. On today's show, we explore the new science of death and the mysterious happenings in the brain. We also discuss the patriarchal nature of computer science. Plus, a 10-year study reveals the secret to overcoming insomnia. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Science. We start off with a captivating story from 2014, where a 24-year-old pregnant woman, known as Patient One, became one of the most intriguing scientific subjects in recent history. After suffering from an irregular heartbeat and collapsing at home, she was taken to the University of Michigan, where her heart was restarted, but she remained unresponsive. After 3 days in a deep coma, her family decided to take her off life support. It was at this point that Jimmo Borgigin, a professor of neurology at the University of Michigan, began her research into what happens to our brains when we die. James, our correspondent for Simply Science, is here to discuss this further. Can you tell us more about Borgigin's research and what she discovered about patient one?
Certainly, David. Borgigin had been troubled by the question of what happens to us when we die. She had read about the near-death experiences of certain cardiac arrest survivors who had undergone extraordinary psychic journeys before being resuscitated. In her own laboratory, she discovered that rats undergo a dramatic storm of neurotransmitters, including serotonin and dopamine, after their hearts stop and their brains lose oxygen. She wondered if humans' near-death experiences might spring from a similar phenomenon.
So what did she find when she looked into patient one's case?
Borgigin and her team discovered that in the moments after patient one was taken off life support, there was a surge of activity in her dying brain. Areas that had been nearly silent while she was on life support suddenly thrummed with high-frequency electrical signals called gamma waves. In particular, the parts of the brain that scientists consider a hot zone for consciousness became dramatically alive. In one section, the signals remained detectable for more than 6 minutes. In another, they were 11 to 12 times higher than they had been before patient one's ventilator was removed.
That's fascinating. What does this tell us about the process of dying?
It suggests that death may be far more alive than we ever thought possible. The brain, contrary to common belief, is actually superactive during cardiac arrest. Borgigin believes that understanding the dying brain is one of the holy grails of neuroscience. She hopes that understanding the neurophysiology of death can help us to reverse it.
What about the near-death experiences that some people report? Do these findings shed any light on those?
Borgigin believes that given the levels of activity and connectivity in particular regions of patient one's dying brain, it's likely that she had a profound near-death experience with many of its major features. Out-of-body sensations, visions of light, feelings of joy or serenity, and moral re-evaluations of one's life. However, as patient one did not recover, no one can prove that the extraordinary happenings in her dying brain had experiential counterparts.
This is truly groundbreaking. What are the implications of these findings for our understanding of death and consciousness?
These findings challenge the predominant belief that as soon as oxygen stops going to the brain, neurological activity falls precipitously. They suggest that the process of death can be reversed and that consciousness can persist after the death of the individual. This could potentially rewrite our understanding of death and has the potential to bring us closer to answering the age-old question, what happens when we die?
That's a profound thought. Thank you, James. Speaking of profound thoughts, let's delve into the fascinating history of computer science and its gender dynamics. Before the advent of electronic computers, the term computer referred to a female worker who was part of a team performing numerous computations. However, the gender relations in the computer industry have significantly evolved over the years. Here to delve deeper into this topic is Abby, a correspondent for Simply Science. Can you tell us more about the early days of computing and the role women played?
Certainly, David. In the early days, before electronic computers, the term computer referred to a woman who was part of a team doing hundreds of thousands of computations. This is beautifully depicted in the 2016 film Hidden Figures, which tells the story of several Black women working as computers at NASA. These women managed to keep their jobs by retraining as computer programmers, ushering in an era where programming was predominantly a woman's job.
That's quite interesting. But how did we transition from a time when most programmers were women to the current situation where the computer industry is largely male-dominated?
The shift began around the 1980s, when women's participation in the computer industry started to decline rapidly. NPR attributes this inflection point to the proliferation of the home computer, which was often marketed towards boys. The industry's gender dynamics were further influenced by societal associations, where men were seen as creators of the hard hardware, while women were associated with the soft software.
So, how has this history of gender dynamics in computer science impacted our current tech landscape?
The exclusion of women from the computer industry has had significant repercussions. Today, we see social media companies, headed by men, invading our privacy and selling our data. Companies developing generative AI technologies often draw parallels with industrialists who displaced traditional women textile workers. The tools they develop have been used in ways that violate women's privacy and dignity.
That's quite concerning. But is this patriarchal tendency unique to computer science?
Not at all. The issue is much broader. Western science itself has been critiqued for its patriarchal tendencies. Anarchist critiques of science contest the idea that science is objective, arguing that it often reinforces the power and authority of the dominant group. For instance, medical science has a long history of progressing through experimentation on non-white people, specifically women.
Given this history, what does the future hold for technological developments?
The future of technology is still closely tied to societal privileges. Many tech companies, like OpenAI, argue for the development of AI due to the existential threat an undeveloped AI could present. This suggests that future technology could continue to augment the power and riches of the elite and men. However, this is not inevitable. Acknowledging these systemic issues and working to fix them could steer us away from a dystopian future.
That was Simply Science reporter Abby providing a thought-provoking perspective on the gender dynamics in the history of computer science. Now, let's shift gears to a recent international study that has found a link between regular exercise and a lower risk of insomnia. Michael, a correspondent for Simply Science, is here to delve into the details of this study. Can you tell us more about this study, Michael?
Certainly, David. The study aimed to understand the relationship between regular physical activity and sleep quality, particularly insomnia. It involved 4,399 middle-aged adults from 21 centers across 9 European countries. The participants were asked about their frequency and duration of physical activity, insomnia symptoms, sleep duration, and daytime sleepiness at 2 points in time, once between 1998 and 2002, and again 10 years later.
How was physical activity classified in this study?
Participants who reported exercising at least 2 or more times a week, for 1 hour a week or more, were classified as being physically active. Over the 10-year period, 37% of participants were persistently inactive, 18% became physically active, 20% became inactive, and 25% were persistently active.
And what were the key findings of this study?
After adjusting for factors like age, sex, weight, smoking history, and study center, the researchers found that those who were persistently active were significantly less likely to have difficulty falling asleep and to have any symptom of insomnia. They were also more likely to be normal sleepers, meaning they were able to clock up the recommended 6 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Interestingly, the benefits of physical activity on sleep were lost for initially active subjects who became inactive.
What about the impact of other factors like age, gender, and weight on insomnia symptoms?
The study did find that insomnia symptoms were independently associated with age, female gender, and weight. However, the positive impact of consistent physical activity on sleep was significant, even when these factors were taken into account.
What are the limitations of this study?
The researchers acknowledged that they weren't able to objectively assess changes in physical activity levels between the two time points. All the elements of the study relied on subjective assessment via questionnaire. Despite this, the study provides valuable insights into the long-term benefits of regular physical activity on sleep.
Thanks for that insightful report, Michael. From the benefits of regular exercise, let's now shift our focus to another aspect of physical health, flexibility. While being more flexible than the average person can have its perks, researchers are beginning to understand that hypermobility can also be linked to pain in later life, anxiety, and even long COVID. Here to discuss this further is Celeste, a correspondent for Simply Science. Can you tell us more about hypermobility and its potential implications?
Certainly, David. Hypermobility refers to the ability of certain individuals to move their limbs beyond the normal range. While it can be advantageous in some situations, research is increasingly showing that it can also be associated with a range of health issues later in life. These can include chronic pain, anxiety disorders, and even prolonged symptoms after a COVID-19 infection, commonly known as long COVID.
That's quite a range of potential health issues. Can you elaborate on the link between hypermobility and these conditions?
The exact mechanisms behind these links are still being studied, but there are some theories. For instance, the same genetic factors that cause hypermobility might also affect other body systems, leading to a higher risk of certain health problems. Additionally, the physical strain of excessive flexibility could lead to wear and tear on the body over time, potentially resulting in chronic pain.
And what about the mental health aspect? How does hypermobility relate to anxiety?
There's some evidence to suggest that the same genes involved in hypermobility might also play a role in anxiety disorders. However, it's also possible that living with the physical discomfort and unpredictability of hypermobility could contribute to feelings of anxiety. More research is needed to fully understand this connection.
It's interesting to see how a physical trait like flexibility can have such wide-ranging implications. What can be done to mitigate these potential risks?
Early recognition and management of hypermobility can be beneficial. This might involve physical therapy to strengthen muscles and protect joints, as well as psychological support to manage any associated anxiety. It's also important for individuals with hypermobility to maintain a healthy lifestyle, including regular exercise and a balanced diet.
Thanks for that insightful report, Celeste. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Science. We'll see you back here tomorrow.